Welcome to MGO Podcast 13.21. We would not ask our suspended head coach to use the time afforded to him to commit NCAA violations. That would be un-Michiganly.
So this is the third straight week we are talking about a 1-1 week with one win over a pretty good team that points Michigan towards the tournament and one frustrating loss to a pretty good team that kind of puts Michigan still squarely on the bubble. And this time it's Michigan losing to Illinois, beating Rutgers. Last week it was losing to Wisconsin, beating Iowa. A week before that it was losing to Ohio State, beating Purdue. They're just on this up and down treadmill. And that feels, I guess, approximately right. This is who they are.
Well, I mean, so if this continues, that means we beat Michigan State, lose to Iowa, beat Ohio State, go out in the first round of the Big Ten tournament, and then win our first round game in the NCAA, and then lose in the second round to like a one seed. That's fine, right? That's an okay season.
I mean, you know, when you're sitting at 7-7 in mid-January, just extending the tournament streak looks like a win. So I guess we'll take it. And what you, our listeners, will take is our advice to use our sponsors for things.
Excellent segue.
The MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com and find ourselves at mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Guide, Human Element, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, where we usually are. All right. So we'll start with the Illinois game. Michigan puts up 1.15 points per possession, shoots excellently from 2, doesn't turn the ball over too much, and just gets shredded. First in the first half by Alfonso Plummer from 3. Then in the second half, Kofi Coburn ends up going 11 of 15 from the floor en route to 27 points. And Michigan, yeah, you could point to the fact that they gave up 59% from 3 on a lot of like crazy jacks, which is true. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. That's a thing. And that if the 3-point shooting is relatively close, this is a real game. I mean, even as it is, it's an 8-point game. But it's also true that when, you know, Alfonso Plummer is able to get 5 feet of space against Michigan's guards, it's not too surprising that he's shooting like he shoots.
Yeah, and that was the concern going into this game, is that, you know, a guy like Plummer is long, can jump, you know, and he can make those shots. Michigan has struggled all year, and this goes back as long as we've had, you know, short guards who don't jump that high. It goes back to the same thing. I mean, it's a hammer. We don't have a Charles Matthews on this team. We don't have an Isaiah Livers on this team. We don't have someone who can guard a guard who can get high enough and shoot so they can just shoot over us. Now, most teams are not going to have someone who's going to be a knockdown shooter, and then 59% is excessive. So, you know, like they miss 2 more of those, and Michigan has a lead near the end of this game instead of, you know, and they were down by 10 most of the game, but like, you know, at the end, there were times when I was like, okay, a couple calls or a couple misses on some of these shots, or Corbello doesn't make it off the backboard every single time. Like, any of those things not going Illinois' way, and this game feels like, you know, a battle. This game could have been like a legendary battle. It's going to be like a great game. But Illinois just had this 10-point lead all the time because those things went so well for them in the first half.
Yeah, we have to, I mean, Corbello came into this game looking like one of the worst players in America. And yeah, he turns the ball over 4 times. But he was shooting like something like 40% from 2, and he goes 5 of 6. And that really does point to Michigan's defensive deficiencies just in terms of athleticism at the guard position.
Yeah, I mean, his game is so... I can't hate Corbello that much because he's fun to watch. I mean, He's not a good looking dude, and he's just got that, like, that attitude that's just wet. I call his game dripping wet, is the way he plays. And he was making shots that were like an inch from just going over the end of the backboard, and instead it comes back down and goes in. Like,
I mean,
but like, that's his shot. That's what he does.
He had a couple of those, I guess, but
yeah. But he also had like a cup shot where he like comes in with his arm extended all the way out and flings it in the air. Like, he's just got, I don't know. That's what Curbelo does. And I think he probably needed a couple games after coming back from his head injury to turn back into that player, because you have to play on the edge to play the way he plays.
Yeah, and then Dickinson, you know, 3 of 8 from 2, 1 of 5 from 3. And he had that kind of mid-season renaissance where it looks like, okay, this is really happening in terms of his shooting from the outside. But he hasn't hit, I mean, that 3 was the first time he'd hit one since he went 4 of 6 against Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this setup where all of a sudden Hunter Dickinson is pulling guys out of the paint, and a problem when he sets up to shoot, and here just didn't happen. And then he was settling for mid-range jumpers against Kofi Coburn, which is fine, right? Like, that's, he can hit that shot. Mm-hmm. But I think what kind of bothers me is that so much of his usage now is mid-range. And that's something that always been a part of his game, but it's getting to the point where it's like, you're not really making these guys work on defense. You know, you're just taking the short roll and you're putting it up, and like, yeah, that short roll jumper is an okay shot, but we're not getting enough of the really good shots mixed in, you know?
See, I figured that was kind of the roster construction thing, because you have Diabate, and he's not an outside shooter, and not really a driver. I mean, sometimes he'll put the ball on the floor, but that's not really his game. And especially against these guys, Kofi is your only real rim problem. Like, if we had guys driving in there, and if Kofi Coburn was down by the basket, you just give up. Or if you try to put it up, it's a useless shot. But if you could pull him away, then, and get the ball to Musa, like, that was going in. Like, he was getting slams on those things, because everyone else on their team is like 6'3". So, like, that...
Well, yeah. So, what I'm saying is, like, he had one shot at the rim in this game.
Yeah.
One. He had 2 shots at the rim against Rutgers. He had 4 against Wisconsin, 4 against Iowa, 4 against Ohio State. Mid-range shots in those games, 5, 9, 10, 4, 11.
I see. Yeah.
He's, and like, sometimes you get those like post hooks. Those are really borderline for what their mid-range or rim or whatever. So some of that is not like, okay, I'm taking a 10-foot jumper, fine. But he just really did not want to challenge Kofi Coburn. And the other thing that kind of leapt out is that, like, last year, these guys went head to head and mostly neutralized each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Coburn did better than Dickinson, but while they were both in the game, you know, he might have been like 4 of 8 from 2, and you take that screaming and running. In this game, he got lit up. And I think it feels like Dickinson's defense has backslid from last year, where last year he's like taken on the whole Big Ten. He's like crushing Trevion Williams. He's doing okay against Coburn. He's crushing Luka Garza. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Luka Garza, they don't double him at all, and he goes like 5 of 18 from the floor. Like, miracle stuff. And that same impact, I don't think, has been happening this year. And I don't know if he's fully healthy. We've seen him, like, on the bike. We've seen him sort of tweaked. Like, he's not coming out for shoot-arounds early. But I feel like it's possible that there's some sort of nagging injury that is limiting his lift, limiting his impact at the rim. Because, I mean, he's not a guy who's a great rim protector, but, you know, he's lost like 20% off his block rate. He's lost a little bit of his offensive rebounding, especially in league play. It just feels like there's something not quite right with him physically.
And that's totally plausible. He also, keep in mind, is responsible for the majority of the offense on this team. And that,
well,
was,
I was
not
say, that was the case last year, yeah, too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think this year, even more so, he needs to be the complete engine. And like last year, there were other guys who could do things, or they were trying to incorporate other guys into it. Like last year, remember, there were kind of like attempts and failures and making different guys the lead of the offense. And like, there was times when like, okay, Isaiah, don't do that, right? Or Mike Smith would have his little things going on. Like, it came and went. This year, it's very clear that he's got to run the offense. And when he's not on the court, it's like, yeesh. So,
well, I don't know how much I agree with that anymore. Because one positive development is that Devontae Jones has really, I think, found himself. So he has 10 assists in this game. He has a 131 O rating. He's 6-10 from two. He hits a couple of threes. He's 7-7 from the line. And, you know, he's actually improved his usage in conference play. He's cut down his turnovers significantly. His assist rate is 31, which is like seventh in league play. So the complaints we had about Devontae Jones earlier in the season, yeah, he's got his limitations, but you know, this, he scraps, and he's got that floater has come online. The one big problem for him is that his shooting from three in Big Ten play has been atrocious. But other than that, he looks like a legitimate Big Ten point guard right now. And so I think that total dependence on Dickinson has been significantly lessened.
Yeah, I mean, he can get to the lane, which has been very helpful. And defensively, it's night and day from where he was earlier this year. Like, he was the one who keyed the comeback. I got a little nervous because he hadn't hit a three for a long time, and then he took the one that was wide open in this game, and it arced for so long. I was like, oh God, what happened to your shot, man?
Yeah, the arc of that shot was just like, oh, that's not good. But...
but I mean, he's hit those things before, so I think that probably was a, you know, oh God, I have not hit a three pointer in forever, kind of getting in his own head thing going on there. But I mean, defensively, he's just turned it on. Like I said, he keyed the comeback. He got the 3-point play, and he got the then he hit a three pointer. That was the 6 points they needed, and then he also had that knockout, which everyone thought was going to be another foul when Kofi was going to slam it. And no, he just, you know, timed it right and knocked it out of there. And go from where he was earlier this year, where he was going for steals all the time, picking up bad fouls all over the place, to where he is now. Like, finally, he fits in this offense. He fits in this team.
Yeah, and this was, you know, he announced his intent to go to the NBA after this season. But I don't think that there's going to be a market for him. You know, like, he could be a free agent who goes and plays in the G League. So this is going to be an interesting offseason, because NIL is now a thing, and I think this is going to be a real test of Michigan's NIL prowess, because they have three guys on the roster who could go and go get paid somewhere to play basketball, but probably, I mean, won't be drafted. Mm-hmm. So Dickinson is not draftable, according to everybody. Devontae Jones doesn't show up on any list. Musa Diabate is a late second rounder to most people right now. So all three of these guys could come back to Michigan for another year, get paid a significant amount of money, and Michigan could have a real good team next year. All three guys could also depart. And so some guys just want to go, and that's understandable, but I think you want to get two of those guys back, because college basketball is a lot more fun than the G League, because you're not playing in front of 2,000 people in Fort Wayne, and you get to play in the NCAA tournament at the end of the year. You're the big man on campus. It's not just a job. And if you can get paid probably better than you would get paid in the G League, like, that seems like a choice that's not too hard to make. So I will believe everybody saying that Michigan's NIL stuff is not up to par if they lose these guys to questionable pro futures.
Well, I was it Kansas or UNC who figured out how to get a foreign guy through NIL? It was one of those schools. Like, it was impossible for, and that was,
well, it's you need like a visa or a green card or something. You need to figure it out. So, okay, if they can't figure out with Diabate, that's one thing. But yeah, also Diabate is the guy who it makes the most sense to come back, because
yeah,
if he starts hitting his potential, he'll be a lottery pick next year, a la Jaden Ivey. Mm-hmm. Right, Jaden Ivey probably could have gone last year, but he made soon to come back. Seems like he made the right decision, because he's probably going to be the third pick in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same with Keegan Murray. So Diabate is that kind of player who has that kind of athleticism, has that kind of potential, but hasn't shown it yet.
Yeah, and then, you know, Houston doesn't really have an NBA. He's not going to get drafted right now. Unless someone sees it like, you know, he was a top five recruit at one point and decides that's enough.
Well, I mean, actually, there's four guys, you're right. Because Houston is another guy who just dropped off, I think, the ESPN mock draft. Like, they had him in the top 10, and then he was in the top 15, and then he was barely in the first round, and now he's gone. And if you look at him statistically, yeah, that makes a ton of sense, because he's shooting 47, 37 on low usage. Yeah, he's 6'8", but he looks like any freshman role player you would care to name.
Mm-hmm.
So the composition of this roster next year is very much up in the air and will depend heavily upon like how much Michigan can summon from the NIL garden that they should be cultivating right now. All right, let's take a break, come back, talk about the Rutgers game.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at teamfanclub.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-734-7000. 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
With a capital G, ball in the beat. Status Chris Paul or John Wall in the league. Grab a mic till the knuckles will bleed. Cause I believe the potent and I'm potent. Have you geek like speed. If rationale is natural, I will weave. It's all edges and peace. Setting press free on a permanent speed. I'm in the world where my princess is player. Ain't she feeling my Vader? And my lore grows greater and greater. Pim trails, drop poisonous vapors. Have you shaking like Gator? Been trill, nigga, process to data. Blu-ray, wait, follow a beta. I DVR for later. Cop a massa with a G to my waiter. You can't define. Minus X, Y, Z, it's a generational elitist. Happy cheating virtual think pieces. See these written words from medical science. Brains.
All right, Michigan with a 9-point win against Rutgers, 71-62. And right before this game, UM Hoops tweeted out the home and away splits of Caleb Houston, which are unfathomable. And this was a home game. So, of course, Caleb Houston is the KenPom MVP after going 5-9 from three. You know, I think that there's probably some random noise in there, but the numbers are pretty compelling. And Houston had a good game again against Illinois. We didn't talk about him in that segment because we're going to talk about him in this segment, but he put up 21 points on 11 shooting possessions, going 4-5 from 2, 2-3 from 3, and 7-7 from the line. So these last two games have been really encouraging, because maybe because they're at home. Fine. But Michigan needs something from someone who's not Jones, Brooks, or Dickinson. It's been Caleb Houston the last two games, and that's why they've performed well, at least offensively, in those games. They just need a fourth guy to be a consistent contributor.
And his defense came along, too. I know we were just talking about his offense, but his defense was probably the best game. That Rutgers game was probably the best that he's played all year. And he followed up with not the greatest performance against Illinois, but not a, you know, terrible. He's not solid, but I don't think he's like a hole anymore, where he was certainly kind of out of position more than he wasn't earlier this year. And compared to some of the guys on the bench who come off and play his position, I think he's probably the best defensive option they have at that spot.
Yeah. And then the other thing that jumps out is Michigan shoots okay from three, entirely because of Houston. He's the only one to make more than one. They shoot 7 of 22. That's 32%, which is completely mediocre. But what it's not is 17%, and therefore Michigan gets to win a game. The end. And the other thing that stands out is that Geo Baker, who torched Michigan in the first one, but torched him in ways that are not, you know, super high probability, he goes with 6 points in this game, does not hit a three, goes 2 of 7 from two. And all of those were pull-ups for the most part against guys who are shorter than him, and they just didn't go down. And that's something that happens.
That's supposed
just
to happen.
To Michigan this year,
that's
right?
That's supposed to happen. If you take contested pull-up jumpers, you're not supposed
some
to
some of
go.
Them miss.
Yes.
Some of them do not go in the basket.
It's you know hard saying this after the Illinois game, but yes, that is true.
So
it happened with Ron Harper too. He missed all four of his threes as well, and that's what it was. I think one of them was open, and the other ones were like, "Okay, I'm out here. I'm going to pull up and take a three because the guy against me is shorter than me and can't get up." And you know, if Michigan had a few games where those shots went in, it'd be like, "Ah, that sucks." Michigan's had a lot of games this year where those went in, and this is probably the first one all season where it was like, "Ha ha."
Yeah, and we've discussed this multiple times before. There's definitely an element to that that is something other than luck. But I also feel that ill fortune has played a role. And even in this, like you know, Rutgers shot 15 of 39 in the mid-range in this game. So that's not even terrible. It's just that only one guy was doing it. It was Ron Harper who's effective doing it. So, like, Michigan is still pushing a ton of shots into the mid range. And the only problem is that this year, like, you know, Johnny Davis, like, posting up and having his, like, Dirk jumper from 8 feet against Eli Brooks is not a bad shot. Like right. last year, those were bad shots because you had Franz Wagner contesting, and now you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But still, Michigan puts a lot of shots in the right places, and they just haven't had the length to properly contest them this year because they don't have any wings on the roster. And that's the thing that kind of worries you, because are they going to have any wings on the roster next year?
They're
bringing in Jet Howard.
Jet Howard is the only one. I mean, Kobe might come along. 6'8". Bufkin might come along. Barnes might show up as a redshirt freshman. Like, you never know. Guys get better in basketball more than any other sport, I think. Like, that freshman.
Yeah, I'm not. But even, like, you know, Barnes is definitely a guy who could be a 3-and-D wing if he puts in the work. But expecting a guy to go from an outright redshirt, especially on this team.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you were a 6'5 guy and you could play defense, it would literally not matter what the rest of your game was. You would be getting 15 minutes.
And that's not what Barnes is. I mean, he was supposed to be, you know, a livers down the road. Like, you know, his third and fourth year, maybe his fifth year are going to be sweet. And, like, that's where he was projected when he came in. So Bufkin blowing up is probably their best shot at a true wing, unless they get one in the transfer portal. You never know. You know, there's 3-and-D guys who, you know, are out there, you know, they're available. You can get those guys, and a lot of times they're grad transfers, especially right now when guys who are, you know, people are going to have 6 years available still. Like, there's that whole COVID year is still working through the whole system.
Yeah, Michigan's number one goal in the transfer portal next year is it has to be the most Chandy Brown-like person you can find.
Yes.
Like, slap a mustache on Sean D. Brown and pretend that he goes to, like, Hofstra.
Brondy Schroun.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's what they got to do. Because
I mean, even if Charles they Matthews,
get these
even,
guys
like,
back.
Just anyone who can be that kind of defensive wing and plus something, right?
Yeah, I mean, given the shape of this team next year, I'm like, 3-and-D wing is, like, where it's at, right? Because your starting point guard is either going to be Frankie Collins or Devontae Jones, and those guys are not plus shooters. You know, you're not going to have Eli Brooks. You're going to hope that Bufkin can come along and shoot more like he did in high school. No, threes. You're going to need someone to hit threes.
Yeah. Do you think there's some luck in that too? Because, like, I mean, some of the guys are not great shooters, but I think that the wide open shots that Caleb Houston missed this year are not his norm. Like, I think that it's possible being a freshman, being on the road, kind of got to him or something, but, like, that he's...
Well, his crazy variability conceals this, but he's a 37% shooter on the season now.
Mm-hmm.
So expecting that to increase significantly is difficult. I mean, the problem is that either have guys who are very hesitant shooters, like Johns,
yeah,
or who aren't really shooters, like Diabate, and frankly, Devontae Jones is not really a shooter. Like,
yeah,
set shot, shoots 32% in situations. Everybody can go under on him, and he has not really punished that all season. That's a non-shooter. I mean, not to the extent that X was, or Frankie Collins apparently is.
Yeah, Frankie's shot's just broken. That was,
like, I mean, just compare Devontae Jones to either of the two Illinois guards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the ability to pull up, elevate, and shoot is not something that's a part of his skill set. And so that does a lot of clogging of the lane. Like, if Michigan had Nick Stauskas trying to run pick and roll with Hunter Dickinson, good Lord, right? Gonna chase over against Hunter Dickinson rolling in the rim.
Do you remember when we did the, what was, like, a gimmicky top five or something? Or no, it was on the site when we did our NBA jam teams. That would be an NBA jam team right there.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, team has limitations, and we've reset our goals to just, like, get in.
Yeah.
Like, get in for real. Because Michigan State didn't get in for real last year. They got to the first four, and they lost. That's not in. You're not in.
No. No, if you have to play in, you're not in.
And you didn't get in, then you didn't get in.
Right. Right. The people who played in got in. But you have But if you're playing in, you're by definition not in.
Right. Unless you win, and then you're in.
Yeah.
But they didn't. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back. Talk to the Sklar Brothers.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management. at?
In Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he's like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGoBlog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I'm not here because of logistical issues, but I still need Randy and Jason and Seth to give me takes so hot they could be Illinois shooting a frickin' three-pointer from the
No, we can't. No.
So I couldn't be part of this segment, but I have done what the people demand.
Okay, so we lost Brian there, But I got the Sklars, so this is going to work
fine.
How are you guys doing?
We're good.
All right. You know, it was a great weekend for Michigan sports. Every sport really delivered, and nobody choked. It was wonderful.
I want you guys to be very impressed that my hot take is not about the referees in any way. I had a couple good ones. And now that Brian's gone, I'm reconsidering this. I'm thinking maybe going back and going to like some of my originals, but
go back, man.
No, I put too much time into this one. But I get to go last now because Brian's not here. That upgrades me to the last one. So
nice.
I don't have to do the voice, do I?
Yes, you gotta do it.
Of course you do.
Randy, give me your highest take.
Michigan's women's basketball team, men's basketball team, and hockey team all lost this weekend in key matchups just to keep the spotlight on softball coach Carol Hutchins.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's an orchestrated effort, Seth, that they didn't want to steal any of her thunder. She's the winningest women's softball coach in history, right? Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's just, you know, if we're all focusing on Amazing Blue Team right now, it's for Ukraine. They're doing it for Ukraine, man. That's the hot
take. That's right.
Copy that.
That's right.
Yep.
Do it for the 100%. Ukraine.
Yep.
I mean, I have no other explanation for hockey laying the egg in both games, for women's basketball losing a tough match to a tough Iowa team. Caitlin Clark is my maybe favorite basketball player, period, right now. and she plays for Iowa. But, you know, what can we say?
It was ridiculous. I mean, the women get hot in ways that the men never, like, never see men, like, taking, like, a three-step running jump, launching it from midcourt and making it contested, and then doing it again. Yeah.
Yeah. She's amazing.
Women do get hot. Women do get hotter than men. Just ask Mark Zuckerberg.
There you go.
This initial,
or anyone who's ever been through menopause.
That's true. Do get
moving on.
Did you call it menopause?
I called it menopause. I'm keeping the men out
like
of it.
Like a mini pause. All right.
The mini pause.
Chewy, you were going. Jason, give me your hottest take.
Hunter Dickinson getting embarrassed by Kofi Coburn's the best thing that happened to Michigan, because it's proving to him that a guy who can barely play in the NBA when he gets there can just destroy him, so he'll stay at Michigan for another 2 years.
Maybe? So you look at the line on the game, and if you watch the game, you just saw that Kofi Coburn got whatever he wanted once he got position inside. And everyone's like, well, Hunter Dickinson put on the weight so he could battle someone like Kofi Coburn. Kofi Coburn's not even going to play in the league. So if Hunter's smart, and if Michigan's smart, someone make a big NIL deal to this dude and be like, finish out your years here. Make some money while you're here. Who knows? Maybe in 2 years, your three-point shot is going to be insane. But then go get better money than you're going to get right now. And we need Hunter for 4 years. He's going to be a great college player.
It just seems like the weirdest dude to be a Luka Garza around for so long. But like NIL does make it like plausible. Like it's better than playing in the G League right now, right?
Right. Yeah. Go campus. Everyone loves you. It's not like you're going to be hard to spot at a party.
Let me say this. If Hunter was my nephew, I would advise him as such. I would say, look, you're never going to have this experience ever again. You will play pro somewhere, wherever it may be. You might be playing in the CBA. You might be playing in Europe, you know, Argentina. I have no idea. But you're never going to have this college experience where everyone loves you and everyone on campus sees you and you're like, you're the guy. You can walk in a public place where people bow down to you in a godlike sort of a way. Do that for 2 more years.
Are you having this conversation with a megaphone? Hunter, what you need to know is...
Yeah, because I'm shouting way up, right?
Texting him up there. Hey, yeah. All right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'd say. All right, do we have
what's your hottest take?
Devontae Jones is better than Mike Smith.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair. So I was watching the game and thought actually the exact same thing yesterday. You know, right? I remember Mike Smith had speed. Mike Smith had like fast game, and Devontae Jones has like old man's game that's like hanging around the Y where people are like, Wait, he's not fat. Like, can't you just guard him and he just keeps getting weird points? It's like that. He has that type of old man craftiness.
So I pulled up some stats. Yeah. All right. So 2-point shooting. Jones is 50%. Smith was 43%. This is Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Shooting in the Big Ten. So it's a pretty good 1-to-1, right?
Yeah.
Jones, 110 O rating to 106 for Smith. Much higher usage, 24% usage versus 18%. So he's got the ball in his hands a lot more. 31% assist rate versus 27. 16% turnover rate versus 25. They're equal in free throw percentage, both at 79%. But Jones has all the steals and shoots 22% from three, while Smith shoots 51. But other than that,
So that's a difference.
It's a big one.
But yeah, but still, I think he's, you know, he's a more important part of the team. He's a, you know, he's driving the offense when Hunter's not. I mean, he's got to be the number two option now, right?
Definitely.
I think he
definitely
is
the number two option.
I mean, Eli has kind of faded a little bit, and you see Devontae kind of stepping in there. I mean, Caleb Houston, 21 points again. It's one of those things where, like, no, don't get good enough that you're going to want to leave after 1 year. Right. Like, don't put up stats enough that you're going to want to leave.
He's not close. But I'm surprised it's not even a hot take. I'm surprised that you guys weren't, like, immediately like, no. Like, Smith was like, there was a Final Four caliber.
I literally thought it as I was watching the game. I was like, I wonder if Mike Smith would have been better in this game. That was my initial thought. And I'm like, I don't think so.
It's so funny because they're both bad on defense for different reasons.
Right.
Like, Mike Smith couldn't check the taller guards, and Devontae's too slow to check any guard. But, like, they kind of are doing their thing. I mean, Devontae's a better rebounder, and once he rebounds the ball, he starts the break. So that's a really good skill to have. And if you got bigs that are clearing it out, those rebounds are
there. I'll tell you this much. I don't think Mike Smith was going to put up 25 in any game. And he definitely had a couple good scoring games, but 25 is a lot.
Smith, he was on a better offense, so he didn't need to carry the load as much. But
that's right.
I mean, you take with what you get. Plus, you know, Devontae Jones has that old man snarl that, like, you gotta have at point guard, right? Like, Simpson had it, Burke had it, Walton had it, like that look when he's getting, or when, like, there's a bad call on his team, he just kind of, like, you know, takes the ball up and he's got that snarl going on. And Smith never really had that. I loved his hair. His hair was great, but he did had that snarl.
His hair was wonderful. Wait, so what was the difference between their assist rates?
Let me pull it back up again. That was a 31 assist rate versus 27. They're both pretty high, but
yeah, that's, you know, high.
Jones' assist rate,
they share the rock,
way up there.
I'm just saying, you know, Devontae has given a lot of people the ball in great position to make baskets, and they haven't made them. You know what I mean?
So maybe his could be like 10 points higher if people make
exactly.
Just put it down on the road. Well,
yeah, but no, but here's my feeling about our team and about the game. Not that we want to jump to a larger conclusion. I'm sure you've already talked about this, but it feels to me like when my son was like 3 years old, I remember he was like trying to impress one of Randy's older daughter's friends. So she was like 8. And he just, all he could do was like say the ABCs and kind of like do like a bad cartwheel. And then she just walked away. And I'm like, his heart was in the right place. He just didn't have the game to get it done. She thought he was cute for a little bit, but like, he wasn't going to be able to hang at that moment.
He hung in there as long as he could.
As long as he could. It was very impressive, and you got to give him credit. But, like, in the end, that's the way I felt like we have the kind of team that can come back from down to make it a 4-point game. We don't have the team to go from a 4-point game to a 2-point win. You don't have a Trey Burke. You don't have a Derek Walton. You don't have Iggy's Brazdeikis. You don't have a guy who's like, give me the ball. Let me take over here on these last two possessions and get you that.
I mean, who's the guy who makes that 3-pointer at the end that wins it for you? Is it Brooks? Like, that's who they got?
I don't think they have anybody, and that's the problem. Like, they did wonders
in 3 years.
Twice in the game, they had it down. They were down by 4 with the ball. And you're like, you need a 3 right now or a 2 to make it a 1-possession game. get that stop on defense because your adrenaline's pumping high, and then come down and hit a three. Like, that's what they used to be able to do. That's what, when they had Hardaway and when they had, you know, back in our time, the Fab Five, you just looked to Jalen Rose and he did something. You looked
NBA
to Weber
players,
and he got the play.
Which I think we all agree are not, we don't really have any, I mean, Diabate is going to be one, but yeah. That note, fellas, if you want more Sklars, you should not bother me for them. You should go to their podcast, which is Views from the Cheap Seats, and you should leave your hot takes in the comments of that podcast so that they could read them, and we're going to collate them and make fun of you when you're not looking or something. Anyway, we love your hot takes, and thanks for coming on again, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. So we have gimmicky top five for the first time in a long time. It is the top five things Juwan Howard is doing with his spare time during his suspension. Seth, you're number five.
Wait, is it should be doing or he actually is doing?
Is doing.
Oh, well, I'm just going to have to make it work then because I wrote the other one. But
whatever.
Yeah.
Seth, you're number five.
This one's obvious. He is building a synergy database of 3-and-D wingers. Do you have good defense? Do you shoot over 40? You're on the list.
You may have stolen one of my answers a little bit later, but we'll just roll with it. My number five is doom scrolling about Ukraine because that's all I'm doing. So
are you doom scrolling? It's like awesome scrolling. It's like
what?
Oh,
no,
they're winning. Ukraine is like
no, they're not. They're not. They're
you're gonna get a better timeline. They're winning in my timeline.
I mean, yes, they're winning in the timeline, but that's not
I
realistic.
I know what you mean, and every single time the word nuclear comes up, it changes my mood, but yes.
You have Vladimir Putin saying things like, the West sits on its throne of lies. That seems bad.
Nobody believes
that
in that
seems
guy.
Bad when there's, like, a guy who's, like, has a meeting with six other people, and all six people are at one end of the table, and he's, like, 50 feet away from them at the same table.
And yet
that's bad.
And yet his whole country has COVID, because he won't, anyway.
I just am not happy about the situation. So I imagine Juwan Howard, being a person of education and means, is in a similar boat. Okay. Seth, you're number four.
Working on Musa Diabate's F1 visa so he can start making NIL money like Kentucky got for Aka Tshiebwe. Tshiebwe.
Tshiebwe, I think the T is silent.
Anyway, they got him. They got it to work for him. Apparently, it was a lot harder than you thought. Since we last recorded the segment that we talked about this, I looked it up, and it was quite the ordeal. So, good thing that Coach has a lot of time on his hands right now, because somebody needs to go back and forth with France and figure out how they can do this, so Musa Diabate can benefit from the garden of NIL that we have spoken of so highly.
All right, my number four is stewing and or plotting. I feel like anybody who's been sidelined involuntarily because of a incident like that would probably be muttering to themselves, perhaps, saying, like, they'll all find out these sorts of things. Totally natural. Everybody's been there. Everybody's been in the laboratory cackling madly about a crazy plan to, I don't know,
What did you do on your sabbatical, Brian? I hope it's like Eleanor of Aquitaine, where he comes out and like has convinced Wisconsin players to revolt. I guess a second time, because they've done that once already for guard. But you know, to start fighting against the program themselves and missing threes on purpose to like you know show that they're powerful and Plantagenets and whatnot. I've lost the thread.
Yeah, I'm. I only know who that person is because she's a leader in Civ 6.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She, like, it's easier for her to culturally flip cities, I think. I've never played with her. I mostly do Incas. Anyway, Seth, you're number three.
Number three is fixing all the bugs on MGoBlog, especially points, because this is what's the most important thing on the planet, according to MGoBlog readers right now.
Well,
there's just so many bugs that they have to go through.
The points being broken is like a tradition at this point. So
We actually just got them really working
that's
again today.
That's really our fondest tradition where people like fix the points and we're like, oh, I'll get to it. Anyway. My number three is learning how to make pretzels.
Oh, the hard ones or soft ones?
Well, I mean, who would want to make hard pretzels fresh? You can just get hard pretzel, obviously a soft pretzel.
Okay.
But it's very difficult. You need like lye and stuff. It's like it's never been something that like it has appealed to me. But, you know, if I had been suspended, I was like under house arrest. I don't think he's actually under house arrest, but just roll with it. I'd be like, man, I could go for a soft pretzel. Maybe I'll learn how to make one. And also, like the next time this happens against Wisconsin, he can just give Greg Gard a food from his homeland, and then he'll wander away making squirrel noises and taking little bites out of it.
I think that works. What did you learn how to bake during COVID? By the way, everyone had to learn something.
I didn't learn how to bake anything, but I've perfected my flat iron steak, I guess.
Useful. I did bagels. I learned how to make bagels.
I'm just not a baked goods. Like I'm like a meat guy. Like I'm good at doing meat. Oh yeah. I learned how to do a brisket on a Weber grill. That's what I did.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So anyway, Seth, you're number two.
A 4,000 word oral history of the Fresh Five for Halo Victors 2022. We need this. No one's writing it right now. It'd be great for the program. It'd be an amazing story. Be fascinating perspective from a Fab Five guy talking about the Fresh Five and someone that they would all talk to who wasn't part of it. That's you, Coach.
The Fresh Five is this recruiting class?
No, the Fresh Five was like Stauskas and Gary and Karras and like...
Yeah.
Like the story of their career is cool, but like no one who was part of it can really tell the story. But who's going to talk to, you know, who is out there that they would all speak to? They would speak to Coach. That's who they would talk to.
Sam Webb, probably. Sam Webb could do this.
I got him working on something else. He's doing a recruiting thing.
My number two is recruiting Shaun D. Brown, or approximate shaped person, as you mentioned in number five, the figuring out everybody who's 6'5 and shoots 40% from three nationally, tampering with them. Tamper. Seth, you're number one.
Finish the defensive UFR for the Orange Bowl so I don't have to talk about it anymore.
That implies that he's already started it.
No, I can just pass him along what I've gotten so far, and he can just, you know, zip it up, take care of the Vincent Gray section nicely without making anybody upset.
It took you years to gain the ability to take
over. Oh, no, I already got it charted. I just don't want to write mean things about guys who've already graduated that people are going to get angry about.
Well, you could just not write mean things and write accurate things that aren't necessarily mean. They're just true.
Okay, defensive UFR for the Orange Bowl coming soon. Co-written by Seth Fisher and Juwan Howard.
All right, my number one, being tall.
Yeah, he's
the lifestyle. It's got to work on it. You just got to meditate until you're really tall, and then if you stop the meditation, you shrink.
Being tall should have prevented him from like picking up a rogue basketball while it's still on the court, right? Like that. Like the amount that it takes to bend down all the way from where he is, some point along that way should have told him, like, oh, maybe I don't need to pick up this basketball. Like he had more time to think about it than anybody. Just saying.
All right, let's talk some hockey.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Drain and Dave Nasternak, our hockey crew, to talk about a disappointing weekend against Notre Dame. Michigan gets swept, and I mean, I think we have to talk about the fact that the Saturday game was decided when Dylan Duke got knocked over on a clear interference, and
knocked
then
over.
His guy went on to score.
That's
and
the, very I mean, diplomatic of you.
You look at the replay and like Bill McCault's arm shoots skyward immediately. And I'm like, yeah.
Ben Mason was impressed by that hit. He was that was
extremely, extremely difficult to suck up right there because, you know, Michigan is in position to maybe get the number one overall seed in the tournament. That really hurts them. I mean, I don't want to go full conspiracy theorist here, but it really does feel like for much of the year, Michigan has controlled a lot of the play. They've controlled shots. They've, you know, been the aggressor in most of these games. And then you still come and you look at what the penalties are at the end of the game. And it's like, yeah, the opposition got 6 to Michigan's 4. And I understand that there's a little bit of discipline involved in there. But you know, frankly, the way head hits and all this stuff is being officiated is ridiculous and inconsistent. And that was just sort of the cherry on top of the season of officiating that I would struggle to discuss in terms that are family friendly.
So Craig was doing some digging because, you know, late Saturday night when no one's very happy. And he said, do you know who leads the NCAA in penalty minutes? And I was like, well, I'm guessing Michigan because you're asking me. And he's like, yes, Michigan has 517 penalty minutes. They're tied with Bowling Green. And he's like, is it weird to you that the team with the most NHL talent and probably the best skaters and one of the most prolific offenses also takes the most penalties and gets the most minutes? And I said, well, okay, you know, the majors is one thing, like you said, about hits to the head. And, you know, we've said that there's a number of them. I think Christy tweeted on Friday that was Michigan's 10th or 11th major of the year, which seemed low to me, honestly.
Yeah.
But I would say that 70% of them are probably correct-ish. But even then, that's still a lot more penalty minutes that have to be added in. 517, third place is 476. So you're taking 40 more penalty minutes than the third place team. And Minnesota's at like 224. I mean, it just gets to the point of where you start adding this up and you're like, wow, Michigan must be the least disciplined team ever in the history of ever who has any sort of talent. But that doesn't seem to make sense either.
No, and I mean, I don't know if I could agree with you that most of the majors were good calls.
We don't have to.
I mean, Truscott got a major for a cross-checking boarding call where the guy barely even touched the boards. And, you know, Van Wy got one when his guy fell over immediately before he made contact with him. And it just feels like, you know, you see hits and you're like, that's a major. And now every hit is that's a major, except when it happens to Michigan. Like, how many 2-minute boarding calls has Michigan taken versus delivered? Well, I mean, there's no such thing as a 2-minute boarding call for Michigan anymore. It's always five.
And on Friday, they didn't get a power play until there's like 4 minutes left in the second period. And at that point, Notre Dame already had a 2-goal lead and had their power play. And I mean, like you said, you don't want to play conspiracy theorists, but you're also just stating facts here.
Well, it's also exceptionally frustrating because if you're sitting here entering the tournament, what is the blueprint to beat Michigan right now? Beat them up, right? The two teams they've struggled with the most, Western Michigan and Notre Dame, are really physical teams. We saw that when Western came into Yost in October and they were throwing the body around big time. Western's also the heaviest team in college hockey. Michigan is one of the lightest teams. And we saw that in the opening minutes of Friday's game, right? Where Notre Dame is finishing every check. And obviously they score the winning goal on Saturday, getting away with it, but from just bulldozing a Michigan player. Like, that is always what is said about teams that are fast and skilled, is that you need to beat them up physically. And so Michigan, you know, is trying to push back against teams that are going to do this to them and seem to have no ability to really do that. Without it becoming a really game-changing penalty against Michigan. And obviously, there's some degree of discipline involved. I mean, look, the Johnny Beecher thing on Friday night, whatever you want to say, I mean, it is, I think someone was looking through the rule book, it is head contact to the head or neck area. And it was pretty clearly the neck area, not the head. But regardless, what you doing? Like, the faceoff had been won. The puck was way on the other side, and Beecher just cross-checks the dude way up high. I mean, not a hockey play at all. Nothing going on there. And, you know, that's been one of the issues. And I think that there's some degree of discrepancy here, and we can put on the tinfoil hats and everything, but Michigan's got to be a lot smarter, too. And I think at this point, you got to just tell the guys, you cannot cross-check a guy in the back at all, ever. Any circumstances, right?
I mean, isn't that what the NFL's trying to end anyway?
Hit them in the chest when they're facing you, but do not touch them in the back and do not touch them in the head with those sorts of things. I mean, I've had this frustration with Nolan Moyle this year where, like, there were times when I sort of have thought Mel needs to scratch him because this keeps, like, that Beecher thing. I mean, Michigan was doing a good job killing the penalty before the Portillo disaster happened, but still, you just can't do that in this kind of game with everything on the line for a regular season title. You can't do that. And in a tournament that is as cruel as the NCAA tournament and a highly random one game thing, you need to do as few things as possible to put yourself in those situations. And you can't do that to yourself.
Well, yeah. And, you know, one thing that I think really jumps out about this weekend is like the margins in these games are so thin. So you have one mistake from Portillo, and then before that, Notre Dame's first goal in a period where Notre Dame gets a total of four shots is just a puck from the point that deflects coming in, and so it's impossible to expect the goalie to have any control on a rebound, and he kicks it out into the slot, and Notre Dame's able to score off just a total fluke. And just the way college hockey is set up these days, you know, you can have all the skill in the world, but you're still going to be playing a one single elimination game in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where anything can happen. So Michigan might be a really talented team, but it's the whole thing is set up so that doesn't matter. As much as they can do it is to neutralize teams that have a lot of talent.
Here's some things that are not conspiracy. They're a young team. So other teams have like seen these refs for a long time. Even Minnesota is like
Michigan, you're saying?
Yeah, Michigan's a very young team. Some of the guys are older, but like there's a lot of young dudes on this team who pick up a lot of those penalties. Like, you know, Estapa comes out against Ohio State and like picks up two penalties, and you know, and like that's what happens with young players. They don't know the refs yet. The refs know some of the players on the other teams a lot better. And I think you kind of get into this feel when you're playing these guys. You know, you know who the refs are. You know what kind of what you can get away with. You know when they're looking.
Yeah, I don't think that's accurate, because Michigan's penalty minute leaders are like Moyle and Lambert.
Right.
And Van Wy. Estapa is up there. That's true. But like Summers has 35 penalty minutes. No, Bortolo has 35. How does Brendan Brisson have 26 penalty minutes?
Because he takes off. I mean,
that Alex was a big story Turner, last
beginning
year.
Of last year was yeah. like, how many offensive zone penalty minutes is he going to take as far as minors go?
You know, I just want to throw this out there because Brian kind of mentioned it. Playing Notre Dame is a microcosm of the NCAA tournament in that the margin for errors is so small. We've said this for a long time against Notre Dame. You cannot concede the first goal. And it really sucks that Michigan got the first goal against Notre Dame in three of four contests and came away with zero victories. But that is more about the fall in particular than this weekend, considering you got the first goal in the Friday game with 57 minutes to go. So you get the first goal, but it's a long way to go. But the point is, you know, you come out against a team like Notre Dame and you're always clenched to try and get that first goal, right? That was Saturday's game where the first 25, 30 minutes are really tight because Michigan is doing everything they can to not concede that first goal. And then if you get it, then you kind of have to go into to some degree of defensive mode. But obviously Friday, it was a long way to go and they got a little unlucky on the equalizer. But then from there, you have one bad mistake and then boom, you're behind in the second period with 35 minutes to go. And then Saturday, same story. You give up the first goal. Now you're behind. And once that happens, then Notre Dame can do what they always do and just really put the clamps on. And, you know, you look at Saturday, you don't get that first goal and it takes them so long to get the equalizer, which credit to them, they got. But it was then going to be very hard to get the game in regulation. And you wanted to get the game in regulation. That's why Notre Dame gets to overtime a lot, is because you spend so much time just trying to get the equalizer. Then by the time you get to the tie, you've only got like 5 minutes to go in the game, which is what happened on Saturday. So you don't have margin for error against Notre Dame, and you're not going to have any margin for error going forward, probably outside of this coming weekend. Every weekend after that, every game will have no margin for error. And you can't have the goalie giving away goals outside the net like he did on Friday. You can't have guys cross-checking people in the neck when the play is not even there. You can't have two defensemen, you know, one goes for the pick six and totally whiffs, and then the other one can't cut off the pass for the first goal on Saturday, right? All those sorts of things. Yeah,
what is with Michigan defensemen on two-on-ones getting so aggressive towards the guy with the puck?
Well, I would have just liked to see Luke Hughes lay out. I mean, he kind of like hunched over to the pass. Just go on your belly. I mean,
he's also like way too close to the guy with the puck. And we've seen Jack Summers do this. We've seen multiple Michigan defensemen leave the center of the ice where they can reasonably cut off a pass. And then as soon as it gets past their stick, it doesn't have to be a saucer pass because there's nothing left to avoid. And you've got a cross slot one timer coming. So, I mean, they've been pretty good defensively for a while now, but that has really stuck out as something where it's just like, what are they teaching these guys?
Well, and it was the second straight weekend where Nick Blankenberg is just totally, no one knows what he's doing. And then, well, this week we know what he was doing. He was trying to jump the route on that stretch pass through the neutral zone and comes up empty. But last week against Ohio State, too, remember they give up a 2-on-1 goal 10 seconds after the faceoff, where when you watch the play, Nick Blankenberg is at center ice. I don't know what he's doing. The play is nowhere near there, and the pass goes by him, and it's a 2-on-1, and they score on that. I mean, not great. Yeah.
That's just lack of attention to detail, and it could be coaching in some instances. I mean, it might just be players. I mean, I think the Hughes thing probably is just being young to some extent. But, I mean, Blankenberg and Summers are seniors. They've seen two-on-ones for the last 15 years. I mean, I don't think they're played any differently at this level or in this year than they were, you know, when we were all kids. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we shouldn't overreact to one or two games against Notre Dame where Michigan controlled the play. I mean, they kept putting up the fact that like Notre Dame had 14 block shots, and they're like, ooh, they have block shots. Block shots are inversely correlated with winning hockey games because they mean that you are staring down a lot of shots. And Notre Dame did a great job defensively, but Michigan outshot them in both these games significantly on Saturday. And I do feel like Notre Dame in particular is a team that Michigan has struggled with this year, but teams like Michigan, like last year's Michigan team, came out and they swept Notre Dame at Notre Dame. So you don't want to read too much into just a couple of hockey games that had some, that like all Notre Dame games are based essentially on one or two bounces. Michigan didn't get those, and that's what Notre Dame does. And this is a very good version of what Notre Dame does.
Well, and I made a big point of this on Saturday because I did complain about the Duke call, and that is a legit complaint, and it should have been a call. But if you look back at the entire weekend, how many mistakes did Notre Dame make in their zone by their defensemen or back-checking forwards at all? I mean, I'm probably at zero, maybe one at all in two games combined. I mean, at some point that seems a little fluky because, like, what are you guys, like deities now? I mean, like, you just don't make mistakes, but I mean, Michigan actually didn't make a ton on Saturday. They made one and they paid for it. And it, I mean, they tied the game, but you know, if you get the Duke call and then you don't make that mistake, maybe you're up 1-0. I don't know. But by that point, like they weren't going to win the Big Ten anyway, because like, I mean, if you've watched any of the Minnesota Wisconsin series, it's like, yeah. I don't even know if those were hockey games. It was just a practice for Minnesota, but, you know, when you play a team that doesn't make any mistakes at all, it's got to be impossible to win unless you can just find the net in infinitely creative ways as well.
Yeah. Pairwise implications, Michigan has dropped behind Minnesota State for the number one overall seed. That is probably about as far as they can fall. There's a real big gap back to number three. So they can take it back from Minnesota State. I've clarified what the issue was with the common opponents is it's not total record because they don't want to overrate the fact that you played some trash team four times and beat them four times. So it's, they average out your winning percentage against all common opponents and then average those. So that was the issue. And Notre Dame actually will win the comparison with Michigan no matter what happens because they have a season sweep of Michigan. So that's only really relevant for Notre Dame. It gives them a comparison that they otherwise would have no shot at getting. So they're up to a seven seed, the seventh overall seed, actually. Let me restate that. So, and Minnesota's up to the last number one seed. So this was a pretty good Big Ten, or at least a very bifurcated Big Ten. You go from 55 to 42 points, 1 through 4, and then it's down to 20. So there were three good, bad teams, very bad teams, and three pretty good teams, all of them.
Alex, weren't you going to say something before about how like 45 points won the Big Ten a couple of years ago or something?
Yeah. Well, it was less than that. I think it was 39 won the Big Ten a few years ago. But, you know, that was a different Big Ten. Penn State was a very good team that year. Obviously, Michigan and Minnesota were not as good. They were solid teams, but they were not great teams. And MSU was actually close to 500 that season. So it's just kind of split. And what we've seen is, you know, Michigan and Minnesota are really, really good. Notre Dame can get you on any given night and are playing very well right now. Ohio State is a mediocre team, probably subpar, but with an excellent goalie who has brought them into the tournament. and then three really bad teams at the bottom. And those three really bad teams at the bottom, I don't know, looking at this weekend, do we think any of those teams are going to win a single game in these quarterfinal matchups? I mean, they maybe one would get a game, but it's really hard to see any upsets happening in this opening weekend of the Big Ten tournament, frankly. I mean, Penn State can score a little bit, but their goaltending is awful. Wisconsin is just a mess. MSU is just a mess. And now they're playing three teams that are all going to be in the tournament, probably. So I wouldn't bet on any upsets happening.
Actually, I think MSU is probably the worst of all of them, and I'm kind of happy that Michigan's drawing them.
Well, they did finish dead last, so that makes sense. Now, one remarkable thing is if you look at the current pairwise, Michigan played number one, they're number two. They played number four, number six, number seven, number 10, 11, 12, and 13. So their schedule this year was meaty.
That's what they should do.
Yeah. They loaded it up, and they're going to reap the benefits. You know, you get to number two in pairwise, apart because you play that tough schedule. Yeah. If Ohio State had done as well as Michigan had in the Big Ten, they still wouldn't be number two in pairwise because they played Bentley in the non-conference and Holy Cross and all those teams. So it pays off.
And they're mad at us that we didn't play Western again.
Well, yeah, I mean, those. I don't think Michigan should cancel that, but really, like, people who are Western people who are just like, we would like a cheap win over the ghost of Michigan. It's like, okay, great. That's noble.
I do want to credit Minnesota. Like, they won this Big Ten. Like, they lost LaFontaine. They lost almost as many guys as we did to the Olympics and won all of those games despite it and managed to find, like, excellent goaltending when they out of their backup goaltender. Like, that's a team that faced adversity and probably could have folded down the stretch, and instead they just seized the Big Ten championship.
I mean, Alex and I were talking about probably on the Hockey Cast like a month or so ago about how, well, you know, if Minnesota gave some points away and that could be the end of them, and then it was not.
Yeah, I mean, they looked not great. They were going to lose the Olympians. We had seen close for two weekends in net. He had lost one to Lowly, Alaska, where he gave up like three or four goals on 15 shots. He had given up five on 20 shots against Michigan in that second game where Michigan got shellacked in the shot department, but won a blowout. And there were some technical things that I thought were little red flags with him. And then any goalie at any time can get hot. And that's kind of what's happened since then. And they played really well down the stretch. They're an excellent coach team. And looks like they're going to get a number one seed for the second straight year. So all the credit to Bob Motzkow there.
Yeah, they, I mean, the only thing I can make sense of it is it's like the Hunwick effect where, you know, Matt Hunwick comes in, everybody's petrified. And Michigan played the best defense I've ever seen them play for the rest of that year. Yeah. So there's like the fear of God got put into Minnesota hockey because of the goalie switch. And they really performed at a level that, I mean, even Michigan, like this was the first regulation loss that they had in the second half of the season. And that usually is enough to win conference title, but not this time. All right. Is there anything worth talking about this Michigan State series? Kind of sounds like no.
Michigan State's really bad, but one thing I will look for, and even if it happens, it's, you know, take it for what it's worth because you're playing Michigan State, but I'd like to see the power play get clicking again because that was rough against Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame's got an excellent penalty kill, obviously, but Michigan, you know, they have reintegrated the Olympians. I think this will be a good training period for Michigan to tighten some things up, both with their line combinations, but especially on the power play, because very high probability you'll be playing Notre Dame again the weekend after that, and you need to have your special teams clicking going into the NCAA tournament. The fact is Michigan is at the moment like eighth in power play percentage nationally, which, yes, there were a couple of weekends when Michigan didn't have the big guns, but to me, that's unacceptable. Like, with this amount of talent, this should be the number one power play in America with this offensive talent. So they need to get it clicking again. And, you know, it just looked a little stale against Notre Dame. You know, power at the top, you know, he walks around, passes it to the circle. Oh, that lane is blocked. Pass it back. wait 5 more seconds, pass it back over. You know, the goalie's waiting for the shot there. Like, there just wasn't enough originality. And part of that is Notre Dame put so much pressure on you. But I'd like to see a little more variation in what they're trying to do instead of just setting up a one-timer from the circle.
Yeah, and in addition to that, I think this is a big weekend for the coaching staff because you've played Notre Dame 4 times, and they, while Michigan did play decently at Yost until they collapsed, like, this is a time when Notre Dame has figured you out. They've more or less had your number for the better part of the Jackson era, and now you have more talent than them. Maybe their penalty kill is a little bit better than yours, but this is where coaching can make a difference, and Michigan's coaching staff needs to come up with creative ways to get their players into good positions, or at least to find ways to get Notre Dame players out of position. And I mean, that's what we loved Beilein for all those years, was the creative things that he could do to tinker with what the opponent was doing on defense and to avoid certain things. And, you know, it now, I mean, that's what we said Harbaugh needed to do in football. And like, they've done some of that in the past year or so. And I mean, this is Mel, you've got all the tools, and, you know, McCall, I know he does some special team stuff. You're never going to have a bigger bag of tricks to be able to pull from. And this is the time when you need to figure it out, because like Alex has said, you're going to run into these tournament games where, you know, you screw up 1 or 2 times and you're in a hole. Well, you know, part of digging it out is getting creative and getting your, you know, multiple Hobie Baker candidates or future NHL all-stars and put them in good positions to be able to score goals and to win games.
Yep. Yeah, the point about just trying to set up the one-timer on the left circle is well taken. I think everybody is expecting that at this point. So, all right,
guys. There are other things you can do. I mean, there are ways, and they have gotten creative at times. They've gone like a low high into the slot and used the bumper and different things like that. I mean, there are screens off of that you can run and backdoor cuts and things. And I mean, this is what Michigan needs to do, because it's not for lack of on ice talent.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook. And Coach, if you want my Synergy login, the username is seth@mgoblog.com, and the password is 43.
Who's got it better than us?
No!